Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled. Welcome back to Pixel Sift, Radio Murdoch's weekly video game show. Each week, we sift through the rubble of the wasteland to find caps, stim packs, and the greatest video game commentary you can find this side of Australia. It's a bit of a claim, isn't it?
It is. No, we are. Own it.
Yep. All right. Stick to your guns. I'm Gianni. This is episode 8. I'm joined in the studios by my co-hosts, Mitch and Scott.
Hey.
Hey.
This week we are looking through all things arcane and mysterious and the stuff of rumour or legend, aren't we, Scott?
Yeah, we'll be looking at the fabled Nintendo PlayStation, which turned up earlier this year.
That's been something that's been rumoured and talked about for many, many years.
Many, many a year.
And everyone thought that it didn't actually exist, but it actually
looks weird.
It's finally been confirmed. Well, I believe, you know, it might come out fake, but I don't think so at this point.
We're also going to be talking about marathon gaming sessions. Now, they're not all that uncommon if you're a hardcore gamer, but some local gamers are working hard this weekend to make their gaming count for something more than just fun.
As a group of friends, we've always caught up for the night and caught up online and played from home. And so it was just an extension of what we're doing as a group of friends.
We speak to Dionne and Keegan, who are from the 1UP Marathon, about their plans this weekend. To start the show this week, though, we are looking at how gaming multiplayer can be extended beyond the controller and the keyboard in some very interesting ways.
Yeah, so we're going to check out a term we've coined. We call crowd multiplayer.
All that and more coming up on Pixel Sift on Radio Murdoch.
Whether PC, handheld or console, Pixel Sift, Radio Murdoch.
First up today, we are looking at some of the new features that have come out on the brand new Rise of the Tomb Raider game. If you jump online, you can watch these games online. You may have heard of, you know, online game streaming platforms such as Twitch. But if you're using the Xbox One version of the Twitch app to watch the game, you can actually go in and vote on things as people are streaming the game.
Yeah, so pretty much this thing is called Expedition Mode, and as you play Tomb Raider online and you're streaming, your viewers can actually interact with you and choose different scenarios that can pop up. So it's important to discuss now that it is limited to the Xbox One Twitch app, so you can only do this on that.
The game itself is actually already limited to Xbox One Twitch as well.
Yeah.
It's on Xbox One only at the moment. It's a timed exclusive. Yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I can sort of see why there would be doing that at the moment, but
yeah, is that just for now though?
Like, I think
while,
it is for
while
now,
we've got
yeah.
timed.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, so it's unclear whether these Twitch like tools will be able to be used on PS4, but as of right now, when you're playing and you're streaming online, you have the ability to, your viewers will have like periodically have the ability to choose between two options, and they'll either help or hinder you as like cards, for example. So like they can either be like a buff, like big head mode for your enemies, or they can not help you, like they'll choose like more enemy spawn and things like that.
Or you'll lose health regeneration, or the enemies will
have
armor
yeah.
and all that sort of thing. So
yeah, not much information's out on exactly what the cards do just yet.
I'm interested to see whether if you can watch all this stuff on your computer as well, and I've spent a lot of time watching this on my computer, and you can link your Xbox profile directly to your Twitch account as well, and I'm wondering if whether you'd be able to vote on things from the website as well while watching it on...
Well, as it stands right now, Xbox has said that it's only available if you're watching it on the console itself using the Twitch app on the Xbox One.
Okay. So it all has to be linked in using the same...
Yeah, so all these interactive features are pretty much bound to the console.
I think this is an interesting sort of direction that we're taking these games. Games as a spectator sport,
yeah,
like by design.
It almost feels like Hunger Games, if you've read
Hunger
that.
Games,
like,
yeah.
It, like, you know how they could like kind of, you could donate and then get advantages for your favorite player.
Yeah,
things like that.
Pay a tribute to
yeah,
your...
Yeah, or you can like hinder them. It just seems like that. So other interesting, so pretty much at launch, there'll be a set of 64 different cards being the scenarios that you can vote on, and they'll be arranged into 186 possible combinations. Yeah.
See, I just think this is taking viewing of game tournaments and stuff just to that next level. And instead of just waiting for tournaments to come around, we can actively participate in watching games all the time, all the year around, and also benefit from it in our own games. It's a great step.
Yeah, so interesting you should mention your own benefit. So Twitch viewers actually gain certain advantages by watching and voting. So you get gifts in the form of credits. So you can earn up to 500 in-game credits, and you can use them in your own Tomb Raider game to purchase weapons and other outfits for Laura and for Lara, and things like that.
It's kind of cool to see that they're focusing so heavily on this broadcast model,
yeah.
And where this sort of started out, where people can kind of have this interaction between the game, if you're a viewer, and kind of have an impact on the game itself, was probably the biggest one that everyone probably knows is Twitch Plays Pokemon, which is basically, it was like a program that Australian developer had designed, and it was playing an emulated version of the original Pokemon Red and Blue, and as people were talking in the chat, it would put in commands into the game.
Yep.
So it originally started, and basically you could type in up and the character would move up, and you could type in down and the character would move down. And it would be, if you've seen these Twitch chats, they're a lot like, you know, any other chat program. People just type in commands and the character was moving around and all these sorts of things. So as it was going along, it was kind of hard for them to kind of do stuff, and people had to kind of coordinate and collaborate in order to do stuff, and people were typing commands so quickly that things
were
like...
You would get like organized packs of people that would like try and make... Red do something weird and like,
yeah, it spawned,
or just try to throw off the game.
It spawned a massive online sort of following. It became like, you know, there were subreddits dedicated to it. And as it sort of developed, they brought in a different mechanism where basically you could vote whether you wanted either anarchy, where every command entered in would have an immediate effect, or you could have order, where basically every command was sort of averaged out. So if it had 50 ups and only 40 downs, then you would go up.
It's like a voting system.
Like a voting
majority
system.
Rules.
Yeah, like a majority rules voting system. So, and people could vote on that as well to determine whether you wanted an anarchy system or if you wanted an order system, and it would change the way that we're doing. I mean, they managed to pass the Elite Four. And like all the characters in the things, like the Pokemon themselves became like mythological characters, and like you're trusting in them.
Yeah, people assigned almost to a religious extent.
Yeah, it was hilarious sort of stuff. And there's another... you know, an aspect to this as well is that people are also designing other games that are designed specifically for Twitch chat as well.
Yeah.
Now, there was a really cool one we were just looking at before this as well. And could you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, so pretty much it's called Choice Chamber, pretty much. It's almost the same as Twitch Plays Pokemon. However, you're controlling your own character. It's a side-scrolling platformer, but there's also weapons and things like that. But if your character comes across a chest, your Twitch audience can actually interact with you directly and determine what will be in the chest. So it will present, the game itself will present the Twitch viewers with a certain amount of options, very similar to Tomb Raider. For example, sword, bow and arrow, or another weapon. And then your viewers will actually vote on which one will actually appear for you in that chest.
And also their words themselves can actually appear as platforms
absolutely
in the game, or you can vote on particular types. So you can say a word and it will make particular platforms appear. You can put in numbers. It's phenomenally
I think
clever.
The video we're just watching, like they summoned a godly fist to come and punch.
Just wiped out the whole screen.
Wiped out
basically.
The monster.
It's just so creatively interactive.
And it wouldn't have ever been possible before this sort of platform.
No,
ever
not at all.
Around,
it's really just, it really is just embracing that idea of Pokemon on Twitch.
We're definitely going to put a link up to the video on that one.
I love that video.
So have a look at our page for updates this week, and we'll have a video. Have a look at it.
Check it out. It's totally worth it.
I kind of a bit blown away by it, to be honest. I don't really know.
As a viewer and also as the player, I'm keen on both levels. I think it would be so much fun. And depending on who you play, who's playing, I guess, the game in front of you would change your enjoyment levels as well, because there's a couple of characters from what we've seen.
Yeah, and you can add in all sorts of different elements. I'm hoping that this becomes more of a thing, and
I would
wondering
love it
if
to
it's
become
gonna
more
be,
of a thing.
if it's going to be more of a like a mainstream thing, or we're going to see more of the indie developers.
Well,
like the
just like
who
the MOBA aspect, like a lot of games nowadays are incorporating the MOBA aspect. I think this might be the next step or next like staple, like Horde Mode, for example.
Yep.
That was like another movement.
Maybe that'd be a new genre you could have. You could have basically the team, the viewers, and you are the player fighting against that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it seemed to be pointing towards a little bit in that. Like you said, you can either have the people that are trying to make it happen and make you pass the level, or you're going to have your trolls kind of fighting for chaos. So if you've got a team full of viewers that are all about chaos, then yeah, you might not pass the
it
level
also makes
very
for
easily.
Amazing viewing as well when you're watching.
I think
this
so.
As well,
absolutely.
So, yeah. All right. Great. Let's go on to our next topic. You're listening to Pixel Sift on Radio Murdoch. Now, I'm sure we can all admit to some marathon gaming sessions. Personally, I played GTA Vice City for about 3 days straight when it came out. And I didn't sleep during that time. I did have to go to school and in the middle of it. And basically, I'd play all night, go to school, play all night, go to school. And basically, I'd wake up and I'd be like, oh, geez, it's sunny again. I guess I got to get ready to go. And on the last day, I actually have no memory of getting home at all. I was just in bed. So after that, I said, I probably should give it a bit of a rest.
If you're struggling with addiction.
Yeah. There's plenty of places to check out online. So we've got a group of friends right here in WA, and they're getting ready this weekend to run the Gaming Gauntlet against time and tiredness. And this is all for a good cause. I spoke to Dione and Keegan from the 1UP Marathon, and they told me what it was all about.
Well, this weekend, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, we are going to be playing video games for 24 hours to raise funds for the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Western Australia.
Yeah, so why a video game marathon?
Oh, we actually did, I think it was Andrew, found a few years back a company, or an organisation, I should say, called Extra Life, that were doing this in the States, and they happened to have an Australian charity on there for a children's hospital in Sydney. And so we all kind of jumped on board and had a go at that for a couple of years. And then I think from memory, they mysteriously disappeared off the list of charities. I'm not sure why. And so Andrew put the question out, do we want to just pick our own charity and go from there? And I think we've just been doing it every year since.
As a group of friends, we've always caught up for the night and caught up online and played from home. And so it was just an extension of what we're doing as a group of friends.
So how did you choose the MS Society of WA as the charity you were going to support?
The reason why we chose it is really personal to us. One of our friends was diagnosed with MS just this year. And we've seen firsthand the support that the MS Society of WA provides sufferers of MS, especially just the stuff they've done when you first get diagnosed is just amazing. Just basics, you know, providing information to friends and family about what MS is, counselling. They're a great local organisation. They've just done amazing things.
How does it work? Do you have people kind of run it a bit like a fun run, and people sponsor you to do it, or you just get one-off donations as people are spectating you?
It actually ends up kind of being a little bit of both. We spend a lot of time and effort, and have this year especially spent a lot of time on social media, you know, at work when we totally shouldn't be, but you know, trying to promote it and get the word out, and try and basically just asking people for money in the most roundabout creative ways we can. But we have found in past years, Dion especially spends a lot of time during the 24 hours taking photos and updating statuses and making sure that people know what's going on. So across the day, we tend to pick up quite a bit of money just in the 24 hours. So it kind of works out a little bit both ways, I think.
And what do you do to kind of keep yourself up and running throughout the full 24 hours? Do you take it in shifts, or do you just, go as long as you can and take as many sugary energy drinks as you possibly can?
I think personally that the energy drinks are a trap. And we've all fallen into this trap over the years, is that you go hard on the Red Bull and then you realize that when you have that much caffeine, all you're doing is maintaining the same state you're in, and then you're on borrowed time then. So as soon as you get to about 2 o'clock in the morning and it takes four times as much caffeine as it should to keep your eyes open, it ends up costing you a lot in performance. your brain stops functioning and you just, oh, it becomes a huge struggle. So there's actually a lot of weird little strategies that everyone has. Like we've had guys, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, just get up off the couch and go and have a shower for the third time in 45 minutes, or, you know, go outside and do star jumps, or, you know, hang upside down on the couch to get the blood rushing away from their feet into their head, or, you know, just all manner of weird and wonderful bits and pieces that are probably almost entirely placebo, just to, in the hope that you'll, you know, suck the last 5 minutes out of yourself, or whatever it is.
Yeah, but we have learned you drink lots of water and you don't eat a lot of heavy foods because they just want to send you to sleep. But yeah, the caffeine's definitely for 2 o'clock in the morning. It's not for any other time.
And what games are you guys going to play this weekend?
Well, for me personally, I'm doing Tomb Raider, and I'll be on the iPhone a lot. I'll be on the 360. And Keegan, you could probably speak for the rest of the group.
Yeah, we've got a bit of a wide array. And it's one of my favourite times of the year doing this, because you start to see all of the different games that you haven't been paying attention to over the year. So a couple of the guys have got Forza lined up. They're going to have some little either races against each other or comparisons of cars and cool stuff. We've got a couple of the guys are going to play Borderlands. There's a few people wanting to play Rocket League. We want to try and see if we can get as many people on Rocket League as we can, which is going to be cool, I hope. We always have the standard yearly NBA Jam tournament where we pair off, pull names out of a hat and pair off to see in a round-robin tournament who can be the best at NBA Jam, because it's an infuriatingly strange game. So, yeah, we have a few things to kind of keep us busy. There is a lot of time where people will flog out certain games that they, you know, haven't had a chance to. I know Fallout 4 is going to be a very, very big one this year.
I was about to call that out. That's the reason why we booked it this weekend.
Yeah.
Dion and Keegan, who will be taking part in a 24-hour gaming marathon, raising money for the MS Society in WA. You can find them on Twitter. They're at 1, #1, up marathon. And you can also watch them live stream from 8 a.m. Perth time on Saturday, 14th of November, on twitch.com/1UpMarathon. The music was by Leo Kwan, and that was the track by the name Passionate Video Game Hero, which I thought was pretty appropriate. And we'll stick a link up to that on our website. Last week, the Extra Life Marathon was on, and gamers around the world raised $6.7 million for children's hospitals. Why do we think gaming marathons are so successful at getting people to open up their wallets?
I think everybody can relate to a gaming marathon, pretty much. Like, it's just with so many people playing video games nowadays, everybody knows that that actually can be really tiring and can be like pretty draining on, like, even physically, not just mentally. Yeah.
We also were talking a little bit about the people who do the speed runs as well.
Yeah.
Last week or the week before.
Oh, the week before, yeah.
And, people often get on that for charity as well, and they'll try to smash through as many games as they can, clock them as possible.
Yeah, I mean, marathon gaming is something obviously not new to anybody. Anybody that's a proper gamer, that's kind of, you know, how it's done, I guess. And I think it's really kind of getting amongst that, you know, the culture of real gaming and getting together and banding together and doing something that's, you know, seemingly is... I don't know, exceptional.
Yeah.
And then, you know, getting people together for charity, it's always great. Anything you can do like that someone thinks exceptional and put a charity like against it and raise money for is, you know, okay in my book.
Well, as Dion and Keegan were saying in their thing, they were a group of friends that kind of came together anyway to play games, and they're like, well, we might as well do something like this to raise money.
Let's do something good with this.
And they've got a friend who thought they should support the charity that supported their friend. So, you know, I think this is a big part of doing, being a good, I guess, responsible gamer, maybe, is that what we'd
say? I think it's putting gamers in a good, respectable position in the community, at least, I think. Having a favorable light shed on them, I think there's nothing wrong with that.
I think anything you can do that can help out anyone else in any way is good. And if you can do that doing something you love and you can do that with all your friends, I think that's a bonus.
Yeah, well put.
Hopefully we'll see a few more of these things as well. I guess we're going to wish these guys luck over the weekend. Mm. Hopefully they'll be able to bring in some good money for a good charity and also play some good games while we're there.
Yeah, wish them good gaming.
I'm going to pop in there for a little bit, and we're going to get a bit of a video and stuff and see how they're going on the weekend. Probably bright and early while they're still very excited and bushy-tailed before the hours of
screen fatigue and stuff come in. And I wonder if anyone's going to have those. Have you seen those Counter-Strike glasses that people wear with like tinted?
Nice.
So that seriously?
Yeah, because people like are training so long.
If you would like to see a link to the Counter-Strike glasses, they will be in the bottom of the blog.
We'll put a link to that so you can have a listen about that.
Because I would like to see them.
Yeah, they're crazy. They're just like normal glasses, but like yellow tinted, so you don't like destroy your eyes. And
is that so?
Maybe we'll give them
it's not a terrible idea. I think we should maybe give them a trial.
Yeah, give them a pro tip on that if they're going to try that out this weekend. You can check out Pixel Sift and all the other great Radio Murdoch shows on www.radiomurdoch.com. Read blogs, check out the upcoming schedule, and listen back to previous shows. Radio Murdoch, the student wave. That's right, you are listening to Pixel Sift on Radio Murdoch. You can find us online. We're on Twitter, we're on Twitch, we're on Facebook. It's all Pixel Sift
all
on those.
Things.
Just search for it.
Yeah.
You know how to use the search box.
I'm sure you do.
You're a grown-up now.
Yeah.
And we're very proud of you.
It auto-completes anyway most of the time. So.
Yeah, you'll be able to find it. We are going to be having a little bit of a chat now about some of the mysteries and rumours of the video game world. And there was a big one which has just been sort of confirmed, I guess. It has been long rumoured and long talked about.
Yeah, like I said earlier in the show, you know, anything can be falsified after it's been proved true. But recently this year, the fabled Nintendo PlayStation was found, I guess. Now, this was something that was created in 98 when Sony made a deal with Nintendo to bring the newly famed CD-ROM technology to the game developer. But Sony wanted more money. Nintendo wouldn't have a buy of it. So I think in 91 they unveiled it, and the next day Nintendo pulled the plug. In favor of
it. They actually unveiled it?
Yeah, so it was the next day. They went with Philips instead. Nintendo kicked themselves because that obviously led to Sony's PlayStation console series. There was a small collaboration. 200 prototypes were made. Supposedly, they had all been destroyed until earlier this year when this one popped up. And finally, it's been confirmed to exist and work. We saw them playing a SNES game on it. But unfortunately, the CD-ROM didn't really work. I think it must have been they think it had been disabled instead of being destroyed.
Okay.
And they also think it might have been console number 2.
Do they know where did they find this one? Do you know?
No. Okay. Well, there was this company. I haven't got the name there. It's something like Adventure. Basically, that went into bankruptcy in 2009, and all their things went into boxes. And there was, I think, somebody from Nintendo was working there at the time, had an office there. And it was just stored there, and it went into boxes and went onto auction, and some guy picked it up, and it's just been sitting in an attic. Sorry, in an attic since then.
This console predates the PS, the PlayStation, the original one.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, you can see pictures of it on the internet if you feel like looking it up. It's a very kind of SNES-y looking, elongated box with PlayStation looking buttons on the top, basically.
And it has a little drive at the front.
So it's good. Yeah, it's got a SNES cartridge spot at the back, just normal. And then it's got this big kind of CD-ROM at the front. And that was about it. I've seen it running with, it's got its own OS and everything. So it looked pretty legit. And it even has Sony marked SNES controllers.
Oh, really?
It looks wild. And on top of that, when they did an X-ray as well, and there's Sony and Nintendo kind of collaboratively stamped chips and stuff in there.
Wow.
They did an X-ray. I love that.
Yeah, well, because they wanted to see what was wrong with it and whether it was kind of like, you know, because they were all destroyed and this is probably, you know, one of maybe one left. They wanted to make sure it wasn't kind of boobied and going to be destroyed just by opening it up.
I like how it has a disc tray. Like the original PlayStations, like they had like a lid that kind of opened and closed, but this one actually has a disc tray.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it really does look like the old school CD. CD drives from a PC, like molded into the front of a SNES.
Just jammed in there.
Yeah, well, makes you wonder. They've remolded it, obviously. It looks fine, but it really just does look like an old PC CD drive.
It does,
It makes you wonder how much of this stuff could have been around that we never even heard of. What would the gaming landscape been like if Nintendo and PlayStation had actually continued on this partnership?
I got so nostalgic about the lost kind of releases that would have been released from this. But then I was like, we wouldn't have the Sony PlayStation series as we know it. And you know, it's always that kind of, you know, what if history changer.
It's interesting in that I remember, I'm old enough to remember when the PlayStation sort of first came out.
Yeah.
And I remember the advertising that they had for it as well. And it was very much marketed at you know, you're 20 something in stark contrast to the Nintendo, well, the Super NES that came out at the time.
So this came out in 1991.
Well, it was unveiled at 91. It was never released.
Oh, okay. So when did the PS1 come out? Would the original PlayStation come out?
About mid-90s.
Yeah.
Mid-90s? Yeah. So do you think...
A long time later, yeah.
Super Nintendo was out for quite a while before PlayStation
came out.
Well, think about this. They were still pushing SNES stuff, so the 64 was yet to come.
Yeah. So I'm just curious to see if... Was Sony maybe ready for this to fall through and then they had the PlayStation ready to go?
No way.
Or do you think they...
I think they went back to the drawing board.
Okay.
And were like, let's stick it to Nintendo. And they did. Like, I was a Nintendo man, oh boy, up until that point.
You're a Nintendo man now.
Yeah, I am a Nintendo man now. Yeah. But I was a Nintendo boy back then. And I remember I saved up all my pennies and I swapped over from 64 to PlayStation. I remember the first PlayStation I got as well. It was the Gran Turismo Platinum Edition. That's when I finally jumped ship. So they've been around for a little while, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to be a Sony boy from now on.
There's been a fair amount of other sort of rumors and video game sort of mysteries. The other one that was confirmed last year was that the E.T. game, which was reportedly to be one of the worst selling games, worst produced games.
It's in one of the worst video games ever lists that I was looking at. Yeah.
I think it was for the Atari.
It caused a market crash. Like, video games were... They were just gone.
There was a video game bubble, and basically that was the end of it.
Yeah, you couldn't...
In saying that, about it did sell at auction for $108,000, according to Rolling Stone magazine.
What does that mean?
What was confirmed last year was that there was always rumoured that they'd basically said, well, pack it up, boys. We're going to take all this stuff and put it in the desert somewhere. Well, and they'd buried a bunch of these cartridges in the Mojave Desert in California, well, sort of California area, and... then poured concrete over it, and they did an archaeological dig, and they said, this is where I think they were buried, and they found a bunch of them, and some of them still worked.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so that was another thing that had been sitting around for ages and ages, and people had just been like,
why would they go to the effort of doing that? Like,
well, I guess they couldn't sell it because the company was basically destroyed, so it was a stranded asset. They had to get rid of it somehow.
So they just buried it in the desert?
Buried it in the desert.
Well, the thing
is... That's what I do with all my problems. I just bury them in the desert.
Well, the thing is, they made more cartridges than consoles existed.
Yeah.
It was like, it just didn't make sense on any level. Mm. Like, even if it was a good game, they made too many.
Poor decision making.
Yeah. Well, it was such a big film, you know, you can't blame them for thinking it was going to be.
It was the era, I guess, of the cash in and the merchandising. You know, Star Wars and things had come out and everyone said, oh, we've got to get on this bandwagon.
I mean, they still do that kind of thing. Let's quickly make a... thing to go with this.
There's plenty of other bad merchandising opportunities.
You should see screenshots of this E.T. game, though. It looks so terrible. Look at, the E.T. You should go on and check it, because
we'll put some of the
blocky kind of pixely-looking thing. They just didn't try.
Yeah, they basically... some dude churned it out in a weekend.
Yeah.
There's been many other video game rumors as well. I remember from the Pokemon era on Red and Blue, apparently if you did this, arcane number of steps, there was, a truck that you could use strength on, and you had to make sure you fainted on the SSN to get to the truck, and you could surf around it, and underneath there would be a Pokeball which contained Mew, apparently, and there was all these, photoshopped images where people had gone and adjusted the thing to make it look like it was legit, and... Oh, so many other little...
Anyone that's played Pokemon, you hold down B and the down button, and then that apparently increases your chance of catching the Pokemon. That's apparently false.
Well, we had the whole, even with the more recent games, GTA with the whole alien kind of conspiracy thing that went with that.
Oh, yeah.
You had to finish the game before you can kind of even start to look into it. But I found that really interesting when stuff about that first started popping up on the internet. To be honest, I still haven't done it yet because I've never kind of... gone to the effort of finishing all the things on that game.
A lot of these things, you just kind of want someone else to dig it up for you, though. And they go, here's the guided tour to find the UFO.
Do. And you watch half an hour worth of video and you're like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
well, I want to do it, but I haven't got to that point yet.
One other game we saw as well was PT, which came out, which was called Playable Trailer. And it was done by Kojima and sort of tied into the Silent Hill universe. And there was multiple different things that you needed to do. And it was never documented in order to unlock certain endings and certain things. And people just started this rumor mill and went crazy about it as well.
So can I talk about Destiny?
We've only got a very short amount of time, Mitch. So unfortunately, we're not going to be able to
Black Spindle and Sleeper Simulant. Yeah. That is all.
Halo as well used the Scarab gun as well. That was another thing. So.
I know there's so many more, especially from older kind of console games. I just, I can't get any at the moment.
There are plenty of other rumours out there. Rumour is, though, you can listen to us again next week. Yeah. It's probably going to be confirmed in a 50 years or so, but you can definitely...
Are we going to have to bury Pixel Civ in the desert?
Yeah, we're going to be buried in the desert.
A truck of concrete.
That's all we've got time for today. Thanks for tuning in and listening to another episode of Pixel Sift. You can find links to our website on www.radiomurdoch.com/pixelsift. Scott, where can people find us on social media?
Gianni, they can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift and twitter.com/pixelsift.
Mitch, if people want to listen to other episodes, where should they go?
As you said before, you can find us on Radio Murdoch, the stream to stream us, and we're available on iTunes and the RSS link on our page.
And we've got a link to Pocket Cast as well, which is Australian one.
That's cute.
While you're on iTunes, if you could give us a review and a star rating, that would really help other people find our show. It
Please
helps do. Push us up the listings. We'd really be appreciative of it.
Please do it.
If you like what you're listening as well, tell your friends to tune in.
Much obliged.
We'll see you next week.
Scott, bye. Bro.
We won't bury you in the desert.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.